My special guest interview this month is with Franco Cavallari. Franco Cavallari is a graduate of UBC, where he majored in nutritional science and biochemistry. His primary postgraduate research focused on insulin resistance and related metabolic disorders, including cognitive, inflammatory, cardiovascular, and diabetes. This research also focused on insulin efficiency relating to athletic performance. Franco's efforts in scientific research and product development helped him win several industry formulation awards from the Alive Academy of Nutrition. He has a very successful background in competitive bodybuilding and continues to work as a consultant and lecturer in the field of sports and therapeutic nutrition. Franco founded Champion's Choice Advanced Nutrition in 1991. He has also directed formulae research and product development from New Life Vitamins and is currently preparing to launch his first major book. Welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Franco.
Thanks, Corey. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure indeed. The first question I'd like to ask is how you actually got involved in the professional world of sports nutrition, health, and fitness.
Well, it all started at about 14 or 15 years of age when I was playing soccer and realized that I needed to build a stronger upper body. I was a real small kid, still am kind of small. I started to work out and realized early that nutrition played a big role. I started to read the early muscle magazines, and if you remember them, they were pretty crude with a lot of these sports supplementation. Very, very crude compared to what we have today. But upon graduating from high school, I went into UBC and started a biochemical degree and moved on from there to the nutritional sciences and continued my studies there. While I studied at UBC, I became my own guinea pig. I was a bodybuilder, training for local shows and slowly progressed towards national and international shows. And I didn't realize it at the time, but my work in the lab and my work in practice as a bodybuilder was really quite remarkable. When I look back at the progress and the progress that many of my peers had compared to myself, it was just amazing. I grew in leaps and bounds, and the results in preparation for shows were just tremendous. I eventually became a consultant without even placing myself there, and pursued the studies of health and fitness and moved into anti-aging and other areas of the fitness industry.
Now, you actually started your own company. How did that come about?
Well, I realized at the time that there were a lot of products in the market. Some just didn't fit my requirements. I ended up having to mix and match different products to get the profiles I required. I couldn't place trust in some of the ingredients because there was inconsistency from product to product within the same company from batch to batch. So,
is that a problem, quality control?
Quality control is a huge problem, and I didn't realize it then until I started my own company because it was an arduous task to maintain quality control of my own products. Because at the time I was competing, and today I know nutrition and health and nutrition is critical to longevity, I put everything that I had and I knew into quality control and innovation of products. And I think that's one of the reasons why my product line grew at the rate that it grew, and it was respected throughout the industry.
Now, sports nutrition is a hot area right now. Certainly, there's a lot of opportunity. If somebody like yourself was thinking about starting their own company, what advice would you give to them?
First and foremost, and I've already given this advice many times, is to stick to the quality and to make sure you meet label claim and maintain integrity. Because although that may result in a reduced margin for your product line to begin with and along the way, the resale will always be there because the product will be efficacious as opposed to someone buying a product and expecting results based on scientific research in the past. And often we, in our industry, some individuals will produce formulations based on research without using the efficacious doses for each of the individual ingredients. So they're trying to fall on the coattails or ride on the coattails of the research in place, but the product does not deliver the results expected. So the resale is not going to be there. You may get an initial sale in the first year and the company starts to die off, and this is quite common.
How do you determine where to buy the raw materials? How do you make your contacts when you're first starting out?
Well, when I first started out, believe it or not, it was difficult. I don't even remember the progression, but it started in the telephone book, which is a poor way to start off. But slowly, I worked my way through to the elite suppliers, and within a few years, I had contacts with all of the elite suppliers that I feel today have been still supplying me. I test every ingredient that comes through for production, And now with New Life, there's a different protocol. I create the formulations, and we rely on Garden State Nutritionals to test our products. But when I was running my company, the C of A's would come through me. Product batches were tested immediately upon being finished, and I was assured that the product was what it was.
So these products that people are using are not always necessarily what they are made out to be?
Not always. And I test products on a regular basis. In fact, I use them to determine whether or not they're efficacious. And when I feel that they're not, I send them to the lab and have them independently tested. And I have a file on many products in the industry today that just do not meet label claim.
Now, I know that you have a competitive bodybuilding background. What was it like to train for and win first place at the 1992 IFBB North American Bodybuilding Championships?
It's amazing. It's just amazing. I was speaking to Tracy and when you guys were at my home the other day, and I said, you know, I said every time I competed, 1 week prior to that show, I said, this is the last show because it's so difficult. It's so taxing. It takes so much of your time. And once you get on stage and once you get the results and it's just amazing, immediately upon winning a show or even competing and placing, you're looking towards the next. This one was the biggest one for me. I traveled into Los Angeles, and the contest took place in Redondo Beach. And that's the mecca of bodybuilding. And you know there's some pretty amazing athletes and bodybuilders that come out of that arena. So it was very, very intimidating for me. And to show up there as a Canadian underdog was amazing. But I didn't realize where I stood until the morning show. And I was told by one of the head judges that you know, I was looking great and was likely to win. And I came out of that show after winning. I didn't realize there was approximately 80 competitors there in this class. It was just phenomenal. Nothing like any of the shows in Canada. And I had won unanimously. It was a unanimous decision from all the judges, which they said had never taken place in the history of that show.
That's amazing.
It was just amazing to have gone there and been so intimidated and so, you know, whenever you're there to expose yourself to such a degree, it's always fearful. There's always fear involved. And I related this show to my very first show when I was 15 or 16. I was 15 years old, the youngest competitor. Could you imagine a 15-year-old going up on stage with their little bikini bottoms in front of 1,000 people and exposing themselves? The fear of humiliation was just incredible. But I likened this show to that one, and I came out, you know, a winner, and it really teaches you a lot about life because you step out of the box when you do something like that, and if you apply the same to your life, personal life, you just grow the same way.
Now, here we are 10 years later, 2002. What's going on in the world of bodybuilding? What do you think about this phenomenon of natural so-called bodybuilding?
I think it's a fantastic move. I know when I competed naturally up until this very show. And I decided at that time, based on what I knew about the athletes, that I was going to take anabolic steroids, and I did. At this time, I mean, I was very fortunate. I was monitored throughout the whole ordeal, and nothing went wrong, but I know today, it's just an incredible event. You have individuals joining gyms, and at the same time that they join gyms, they buy anabolic steroids because they feel it's part of the bodybuilding deal. But, you know, bodybuilding and health and fitness is not about putting chemicals in your body. And this is one reason why I let it go and turn to just maintaining my health and building my company and you know, personal well-being. If we can stick to this natural bodybuilding trend, this is phenomenal. As long as the promoters can monitor the athletes and ensure that they're clean. I know that you competed naturally and you looked phenomenal there. And there's not very many people that can do what you did with anabolic steroids because of the genetics and your know-how. So it can be done. It just takes a little bit longer to reach mature muscularity. And that's exactly what you did.
Well, I'm finding also in my own body that, you know, at 45 and even beyond, that there is a certain maturity.
Yeah.
There's a certain wisdom that you gain through training and by focusing on the principles that you and I have both learned through the School of Hard Knocks.
Right.
That you can apply them in such a way that you can get a better return for your investment.
Absolutely. In the long run, it's the healthier way to go. You feel better mentally, physically, and your accomplishments are more appreciated from a personal level.
So do you think it's possible to stay well using steroids continuously in the bodybuilding or for that matter, any other sport?
Absolutely not. It's a very addictive drug, and I know that we spoke about this. I did it for a short period of time, and breaking away from it in itself was a tremendous growing experience for me, simply because it is addictive, and you're shedding away a little bit of identity when you move away from using those drugs, because they do create a lot of power, a lot of size, and there's a psychosis that's associated with it too. And when you move away from that whole world, there's a period of time where you're readjusting your train of thought and your mindset. But the growth that I experienced, and it was incredible, just because I had to rely on my inner self to guide myself for a while and keep my mindset away from that old arena. But it's much healthier to be training naturally. I train naturally. I run every day and I work out every day, and it's just a part of my health and fitness program. No drugs involved.
I can see in you excellent health, and so obviously maintaining an active lifestyle that includes exercise and fitness and running and cardio and stretching is definitely the way to go.
That's right. And I mean, I incorporate a running program, a bodybuilding program, and I do yoga, meditate every day. These principles were still part of my program in the early stages of my training, visualization being a major part of my training program. But I started out as an individual looking to build a body healthfully, and reached a point where I was competing in a circuit that was full of drugs, and knew that I had to compete using anabolics at this North American level. And unfortunately, I made that decision. I did it, but it was a great experience because I learned a lot, and now I'm back on track.
Well, and certainly what you've gained and now what you're sharing is going to help a lot of people rethink the matter and perhaps have some consideration about the overall long-term effect of some of the alternatives.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about insulin chemistry and health. I know that's been a primary focus in your research and study. Can you tell our listeners what insulin resistance actually means? What does this term insulin resistance mean?
Well, insulin resistance is a condition that we all face as we age. And it involves the cells of our body that are normally responsive to insulin. They become resistant or desensitized to our insulin secretions. So we require insulin in order to stimulate the transport of nutrients from the blood into our cells and to stimulate many processes like protein synthesis. But when we consume food, especially carbohydrates and other things that are insulinogenic, our pancreas gets the instruction to secrete insulin. When our cells become desensitized, we require more insulin to drive our nutrients from the bloodstream into the cells so that the cells can utilize these nutrients for recovery, maintenance, and the metabolism. Again, as we age, because our diets tend to be high in glycemic index and we tend to abuse our cells by bombarding them with high levels of insulin every time we spike insulin, the cells tend to become desensitized. Now, again, this is something that we face regardless of how healthy we are as we age, but we've seen in society today that insulin resistance has progressed at a faster rate than it has in the past, simply because our lifestyles and our diets are processed, are toxic, and there's too much technology that interferes with our natural nutrient profiles.
Well, what are some of the signs that you look for? Like when you see somebody and you look at their physical body and their health, how do you know if they are insulin resistant?
Insulin resistance is a difficult thing to pinpoint unless it's progressed, and often it progresses to a state of diabetes. Individuals who are insulin resistant or diabetic tend to be emaciated because muscle cannot be supported when insulin is not driving nutrients into the lean tissue. They tend to gain weight. One of the associated risks of insulin resistance or with insulin resistance is obesity, because obesity itself actually perpetuates insulin resistance, and it's a vicious cycle. So we have insulin resistance increasing the risk for obesity, and then obesity itself throwing hormones into the system that interfere with insulin's function, and then perpetuating insulin resistance and increasing the risk for diabetes. But there's other diseases that are epidemics today, like chronic inflammation, cardiovascular disease. In fact, even asthma is associated with a chemistry that itself is associated with insulin resistance. So if we can down-regulate the progression of insulin resistance as we age, we reduce the risk for many of these other associated conditions. And Syndrome X is the syndrome that we're going to hear a lot about in the next 5 to 7 years. Because if we focus on the research that surrounds or involves Syndrome X and apply the strategies such as eating whole foods, moving away from high glycemic index foods, and there's a lot of nutraceuticals we can use that enhance insulin efficiency, we actually slow the rate of aging and reduce our risk for many of these epidemic diseases.
Now, insulin is known as an anabolic hormone. And it's also a fat-storing hormone.
That's right.
So what you're saying is that if we exercise, if we eat whole food, and also take certain supplements, that we can decelerate or prevent some of the significant damage that occurs and thus experience less insulin resistance as we age.
That's correct.
And that's going to help us stay leaner.
Yes.
And more functional as masters athletes.
That's right.
Sounds good to me. Now, what are some of the important nutraceuticals that you would recommend for someone in this situation?
Well, in terms of nutraceuticals, alpha-lipoic acid is a powerful, powerful insulin enhancer, as is chromium. We know that, in fact, chromium does not necessarily enhance insulin function, but it's more a deficiency in chromium limits insulin function. So we have to make sure that we supplement with chromium in case our diet is limited. Studies have shown that as we age, we tend to secrete less hydrochloric acid, so there's a higher pH in the stomach. And this pH change may seem to be something that doesn't affect the body in a major way, but it does simply because it affects how we metabolize our food, how we digest our food. Interestingly, most of us know these facts, but we don't really think about it. When the pH of our gastrointestinal tract is increased, our stomach, when the pH is not low enough in the stomach, protein can't be digested, but it allows carbohydrates to be digested more efficiently as it enters the intestinal tract. So the result is that the protein cannot slow down the digestion of the carbohydrate, and the carbohydrate is allowed to digest at a faster rate in a higher pH environment. So this contributes to the insulin resistance because the diet tends to be higher in glycemic index simply because of the pH in the stomach. The other factor is with a higher pH, when the stomach is not acidic, chromium is poorly absorbed, as is the B vitamins, thiamine, for example. And alpha-lipoic acid, having a sulfur group itself, is harder to absorb when the stomach is in an alkaline environment. And acetylcysteine, all these amino acids, are not absorbed and utilized efficiently in an alkaline environment. So these are all factors that contribute to insulin efficiency. And if we can supplement with chromium, the right chromium, which I believe is the GTF chromium containing the glutathione complex and the polynicotinate complex, and alpha-lipoic acid, we're reducing our risk for insulin resistance, and then we as a result will have better control over our body fat levels because the body will normalize this system. Alpha-lipoic acid has many other effects as well. I've been doing some work on gene transcription, and in the book that you mentioned earlier that I'm going to be launching, I reveal how we can down-regulate various genes that are involved in prostaglandin production. And prostaglandins, these are hormones that control various conditions in the body, such as blood pressure and inflammation, cognitive function. In fact, they even affect thermogenesis. And it's so interesting because most of us don't realize that the aspirin that we may need on a daily basis to decrease the risk for clotting as an individual that has a high risk for cardiovascular disease may take, the aspirin actually blocks these prostaglandins that have become imbalanced because of our diet. The same prostaglandins that give rise to these clotting factors also block thermogenesis, which then decrease our ability to manage our body fat levels. The same prostaglandin gives rise to inflammation. So we use aspirin to block that same prostaglandin in the ECA stack when we use ephedrine, caffeine, aspirin if we wish to lose weight. We use aspirin also to block the same prostaglandin when we have inflammation. But if our diet was balanced and our biochemistry within was a reflection of this balanced diet, then our body would normalize these prostaglandin systems so that we could be self-sufficient. And that's what, you know, my program is about. That's what my research is about. It's about creating self-sufficiency so that this prostaglandin system and other systems related to it can function according to our genetic design, because we were genetically programmed to be fit and to survive. That's what our evolution is all about, the survival of the fittest. And we have changed the environmental conditions of which our genetic programming was designed to work in. So we have to now look at many of the antioxidants and factors that combat the environmental intensity so that we hit it head on and prevent this environmental intensity from misregulating or misstimulating these genes. And it's interesting because they've pinpointed the genes that are involved in this process, and it's just amazing.
So I'm going to assume that a lot of this information is in your book. What is the name of your book, and when do you plan to release it?
Well, the book is, my work is mainly finished. We're looking at the editing stage now, 10 to 12 weeks, sorry, from today. We should have something finished. The book is called Potential Within, A Guide to Nutritional Empowerment. And the idea is that you do have the potential to keep disease at bay. You do have the potential to keep your body as fit as possible and to reverse diabetes, to reverse health conditions that are keeping you from living a healthy life. And that potential lies within your genetic programming. So this book is about extracting it and blocking any of the interference.
So we're more than just our genes. Our genome is fixed, more or less, but what we bathe our genes in and the effects of the environment, our thoughts, training, all of this has a major influence on gene transcription and phenotype. And so as a consequence, we know that what we eat and how we think and the environment around us has a major, major influence on the outcome of our lives.
Absolutely.
And that's something that we can control.
That's right.
Now, at the recent CHFA Expo West trade show in Vancouver, you offered a variety of health assessments to help determine biological age. Can you describe the function of these assessments and explain the difference between biological age and chronological age?
Well, we set up this booth. It was a fantastic response. We had various machines that would measure different biomarkers. These are markers of biological age. And what's interesting is when you talk about anti-aging or life extension, people think that it's an intangible concept. But here we're talking about conditions that we deal with on a day-to-day basis that are quite common in most people. For example, we were testing lean body mass because the measure of lean body mass is indicative of your biological health or your biological age. The difference between biological age and chronological age is that you can't do anything about your chronological age. You're going to progress with time. But progress doesn't mean that you're going to degenerate with time. So biological age is essentially a reflection of your biological health. And what we do to measure that biological health is measure these biological markers. Again, one is lean body mass, which tends to decline with age. So another one we measured was the fat mass, which tends to increase with age. And as we discussed, as insulin resistance progresses, our ability to manage our weight becomes more difficult. And lean body mass as we age tends to decline, fat mass tends to increase. Another biomarker is our status or state of insulin, whether it's resistant, whether our body's resistant to our insulin levels, whether diabetes has set in. Another marker we tested for at that booth was bone density, which tends to decline with age as well. We measured only about five markers. Balance was another one. Skin elasticity is another one that can be measured. And we gave people an idea of where they stand with their general biological health. And it was very interesting because most of the people we spoke to came in there knowing that these are things we can test. And they were well aware that they could reverse these things, but didn't realize that these are biological markers for aging. And, you know, when you discuss the fact that these are measures of your general state of health, it really puts it into perspective because people just dropped their mouths when they had an assessment that came out at 60 years of age chronologically, biologically, and they had a chronological age of 40. So once you show people where they stand, as opposed to just talking about the potential that they have to reduce their general state of well-being, when you show that their markers are clearly indicative of an aging body far beyond their chronological years, they're willing to do something about it.
I know that my mother went over to your booth and had her biological age tested, and she really enjoyed the process. But she just had a big grin on her face because she said, "Corey, you got to look at the results here." And I, you know, she's 63, and I think the her biological age was 45 or 43 or something, and she was just ecstatic. So, determination of biological age in relation to chronological age. People think of themselves, if they're say 70, as 70, and they have this paradigm of thought in their mind. But if we can validate that they're actually 50, then they can think in terms of being
50. Exactly. Yeah.
So determination of biological age, to me, is a mandate. That's something that should have done.
Definitely.
And where can people go? Like the medical profession isn't providing this kind of data and feedback, are they?
No, it's not done at all. And in fact, we're seeing a few clinics pop up now. There's one in Victoria called Optima Health. And they do a good job. They have medical practitioners, naturopathic doctors, and registered nurses. I know that Dr. Michael Colgan is highly involved in at his anti-aging clinic, assessing people and directing them along the right path. And I think this is the future of healthcare. Prevention is the future of healthcare. Self-care is the future of healthcare. And you can't apply self-care unless you know which biomarkers have declined and have degenerated. So. It's such an easy program. We were able to, in 5 minutes, assess five biomarkers. And I'm sure that if you walk into an office here in 1 hour to hour and a half, you can probably have most of the biomarkers done. Some blood work would have to go out. And you'd know exactly which areas of your lifestyle you'd have to change.
So having a biological age assessment is very important and something that's practical and gives you immediate feedback.
Sure.
Well, we're just about out of time, and I can't believe how quickly it's passed.
Amazing.
It's been just a tremendous pleasure to have you as my guest, Franco. Do you have any final parting words of health and fitness advice for our listeners?
Well, one of the things that we discussed prior to moving on to the show here was the fact that there's a misconception or a biased flow of information when it comes to the medical field. And it's not because our medical advisors or our medical professionals are purposely trying to manipulate consumers or people in need. It's because the education system that they have been educated through is highly biased. In fact, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is highly involved in their education system. They send people right into the schools to teach them about pharmaceuticals. And if we had the same opportunity to teach these professionals about nutraceuticals, they may not be as skeptical. So the point I'd like to highlight is that, you know, you have to ask questions and make sure that you find health professionals or health clinics that incorporate both forms of healthcare, because pharmaceuticals must be placed alongside nutraceuticals if the condition requires it, and nutraceutical care must be the prevalent or primary choice before pharmaceutical care makes its way into your life.
Excellent. Well, thanks again very much, and we'll look forward to having you again as our special guest on Sports Nutrition Update.
Thanks, Corey. It's a pleasure.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is a division of Holly Health Services located in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. For information regarding subscription to SNU and Corey's Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, please visit our website at www.coreyhawley.com. This is Lisa Hawley, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.